Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Okay, so in the last class, we took the first verse of teaching in this Abhidhammatasangaha, which speaks about the four kinds of ultimate realities, or call it the foundational realities, that the Abhidhamma is going to deal with, and that is citta, cetasika, rupa, and nibbana, which is consciousness or mind, the mental factors, then material phenomena, and nibbana. And of these four, the Abhidhamma sort of takes as its nucleus, the starting point, and the focus of concern, the citta, the mind. And that is for some of the reasons that I pointed out on the basis of the suttas in the last class, that according to the Buddha, it is the citta which is the primary source of either harm or benefit, either suffering or happiness. It's the citta that determines our, the quality of the citta that determines our destination after death, whether we go down to states of misery or upward to blissful states of rebirth. And therefore, it is the citta that has to be tamed, protected, controlled, and mastered. And ultimately, it is the citta that is liberated. So for all these reasons, the Abhidhamma sort of focuses primarily on the citta, and the other realities will be brought in subsequently. Okay, so now the Abhidhamma is going to present an analysis of citta. And maybe for those who are especially familiar with the Chan tradition, the Abhidhamma approach might be somewhat unfamiliar, because in the Chan tradition, one focuses on, what I would say is focuses on trying to discover the svabhava, the essential nature of the citta, which in the suttas, the Buddha speaks about the essential nature of the citta or the mind as being pabhasara, luminosity, brightness, radiance. But the Abhidhamma focuses, we could say perhaps, on the characteristics of the citta and the functionings of the citta. And so when you turn from the essential nature, which is luminosity and which is always constant, always remaining the same, when you focus on characteristics and functions, then you get differentiation, differentiation in the citta. And so the Abhidhamma introduces an idea which is not really found as such in the sutta itself. And that is, when the sutta speaks about the citta, it always uses it the singular term. There is just the citta. So it's cittaṃ. And I did, out of curiosity, I did a kind of global search in the electronic Tripitaka for the plural cittāni. And what I find is that in the suttas, you only find cittāni when it's speaking about a number of people. So the minds, the cittas of those 60 monks were liberated from defilement. Or the minds of those devas, the deities, were pleased with Sariputta's discourse. But you don't find in the sutta the idea of cittas, a plurality of cittas in one individual. Each individual has their own cittaṃ, a singular. But the way the Abhidhamma views the what we call the citta, it sees citta as actually a sequence or a stream of momentary acts of cognition. And those momentary acts of cognition are individual cittas. And so we get plurality or multiplicity of cittas. So one citta arises, passes away, followed by another citta which arises and passes away, and then another citta arising and passing away. And according to the Abhidhamma commentaries, it's said that, I don't know how they know, find this out, in the snap of a finger or the flash of a bolt of lightning, millions of cittas arise and pass away. Okay, so when you look at this multiplicity of cittas, it seems like a chaos. But the Abhidhamma uses certain principles of organization in order to classify the cittas. And in this way, by using these principles of classification, what seems to be a chaos of multiple cittas arising and passing away at incredible speed, it starts to turn into a cosmos, an ordered system of for understanding the natures of these different cittas. And so the Abhidhamma uses two principal schemes of classification for understanding the different cittas, or for classifying the cittas. The first is done by the plane of consciousness, the plane of the citta. Okay, so we have that this here. Maybe it would be fun to read this together, or maybe to get the pronunciation. I will read first phrase by phrase and you could follow after me. Tata chitang tava chatu bidang hoti kama vacharang rupa vacharang arupa vacharang Lokutaran chati. Okay, so this first scheme of classification by way of plane, the citta becomes fourfold. So there is sense sphere consciousness, fine material sphere consciousness, immaterial sphere consciousness, and the supramundane consciousness. Some other translations maybe you're more familiar with, I don't know. So it could also be rendered desire sphere consciousness, subtle form sphere consciousness, formless sphere consciousness, and world transcending consciousness. Just different renderings for the same thing. Okay, first, let's take the word citta. Okay, so the Pali word citta is derived from the verbal root citti, and then the commentators explain citta in three distinct ways. So these three distinct ways is definition by way of agent, by way of instrument, and by way of state or activity. Maybe if there are like people who are studying Pali and Sanskrit, might be familiar, so I'll write the Pali names for these kinds of definitions. Okay. I have to keep the key out. It's okay now.
On page 27, you can see the page number on the bottom of the PDF. Page 27. It's page 27 of the book.
Did I put the Pali there?
It just said that the page you're on page 27 in the book.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Can everybody see that? Okay, so the definition by way of agent is called kattu sadhana, and we could find that here. It said that citta is that which, here we use the word, cognizes an object. The verb is chintati cittam. Okay, by way of instrument, citta is that by means of which the other mental factors, factors like feeling, perception, volition, and so on, cognize the object. So here in the Pali, etena chintantiti cittam. So by means of the citta, those mental factors cognize the object. Therefore, it's called citta. But as a state or activity, and this is the important point, the citta itself is really actually the process or activity of cognizing the object. So here it said, chintana mattang cittang. So it's the simple cognizing, or we could even use the verbal form, the minding of an object. Therefore, it's called mind. So in these other definitions, like the citta is that which cognizes the object, we're sort of, for purpose of communication, we're making an artificial distinction that there's the citta and then there's the activity of minding the object as though they're different. In the instrumental definition, again, it seems like the citta is the instrument and other things are doing the cognizing. So an artificial distinction. But this third definition, as an activity, indicates that there's no citta separate from the activity of cognizing or minding the object. So citta is really an activity, not a, quote, thing that performs the activity. Okay, so now we come to the four types of citta, and this is the distinction of cittas by way of plane. And the word for plane here, the Pali word, same in Sanskrit, is bhumi. So probably many of you know that word. I'll write it. Maybe it's instead of using the board, there's an easier way to do that. Okay, so this is the word bhumi. It means plain. And you could see that the cittas are classified into four planes. And three of these planes correspond to the three realms of existence in the Buddha's cosmology. So we have the Kama Bhumi, that's the plane of existence in which sensual desire predominates, the desire to enjoy sensual objects. We have the Rupa Bhumi, that is the plane of existence in which the dominant mode of consciousness is that of the meditative absorptions, the four meditative absorptions, the dhyanas or jhanas. And then there's the formless plane of existence in which the dominant mode of consciousness is that of the formless or immaterial meditative absorptions, the base of infinite space, base of infinite consciousness, and so on. But there is a distinction between plane of consciousness and plane of existence. And this is the significance of the word avachara here. The word avachara, we could say it's the range or area, or maybe using a more colloquial expression, it's the hangout. You know, we have now the Google Hangout. I've never used it, but I know the expression. So, a citta with a particular avachara is the citta which is typical of a particular plane of existence, or the kinds of cittas that hang out in that particular plane or realm of existence. But the cittas of a particular avachara, of a particular sphere, are not restricted to that plane of existence. Okay, if you look at page 29 of the manual, I think there are some useful notes here. Okay, so this is the important point. Okay, so that there are these four planes of consciousness. Three of these are mundane, the sense sphere, fine material sphere, and the immaterial sphere. And the fourth plane is the supermundane, or world transcending. Okay, now the word avachara here, which applies to the first three types, classes of consciousness, it means that which moves about in, frequents, or hangs out in a particular locality. And so the locality where the citta hangs out is the corresponding plane of existence, the sensuous, the fine material, and the immaterial planes of existence. However, the three spheres, even though the three spheres of consciousness have a close connection with the corresponding planes of existence, they are not identical. The spheres of consciousness are categories for classifying types of cittas, while the planes of existence are the realms into which beings are reborn and in which they pass their lives. And so we have, taking the sense sphere types of cittas, those are the types of cittas which predominate in the sense sphere realm of existence. But the sense sphere cittas can arise in the beings in other realms of existence. So the Brahma deities in the form realm or fine material realm can give rise to states of greed or attachment. They can have attachment to the bliss of their meditative experience. And that state of attachment is a sense sphere citta, but it's arising in the beings in the fine material sphere. And here in the human realm, a yogi who takes up the practice of samadhi meditation and then gains success in their meditation, and they enter the first jhana or second or third or fourth jhana, those cittas, states of consciousness that occur in the jhana, the states of consciousness that determine the jhana, those are fine material sphere states of consciousness, but they're occurring in a human being here in the sensuous realm of existence. And if that meditator goes even further beyond the four jhanas and attains the formless meditations or immaterial meditations, the arupa jhanas, then they'll be experiencing the cittas, the arupa vachara cittas, the cittas of the immaterial realm of existence. But they'll be experiencing those cittas as a human being. They don't pass away from the human realm and take rebirth in the fine material realm or the immaterial realm to experience those cittas, but as a human being existing in the sense sphere realm, they will be experiencing in the jhanas the fine material cittas, in the formless absorptions the immaterial sphere cittas. And so you could see that there's a connection between these cittas and the realms, but they're not identical. And the important point is that the cittas of a particular sphere, if they become powerful enough, they will become the karmic force that will determine rebirth in our next existence. So if the most powerful kinds of cittas in our mind are the desire, are the sense sphere cittas, that those cittas will determine that we are reborn back into the sense sphere realm. If we develop the jhanas and then maintain, say, we attain the second jhana and we're able to maintain that jhana through the course of our life, then at death, the karmic power of that jhanic citta will bring a rebirth into the fine material realm that corresponds to the second jhana. If we go further and we develop the immaterial sphere jhana and we master that jhana and maintain it, then when death takes place, the karmic force of that immaterial sphere jhana will determine a rebirth into the immaterial realm of existence. And then if one attains what are called the world-transcending states of consciousness, the paths and the fruits, those states of consciousness will cut off in sequence, cut off the bonds that tie us to the all of the realms of conditioned existence and open up access to the unconditioned, to Nibbana. Okay, so in this way, the citta becomes fourfold by way of the sphere or plane of the consciousness. So that is the first scheme of classification. Okay, then there's another fourfold scheme of classification, which is by way of the kind or type of citta. And we find this in the manual. The explanation of this is on page 31. So this is, the Pali word here is jati. The word jati also means birth. That's the primary meaning. But it takes on another meaning of kind or nature. And so with respect to its nature, consciousness is divided into four classes. So these four classes are the unwholesome, the wholesome. So these two, unwholesome and wholesome, these are the karmically creative types of consciousness, the types of consciousness that generate or create karma, and that karma will be either unwholesome or wholesome, depending upon the intention, the factor of intention within that state of consciousness. Okay, the third type is resultant consciousness. This is, in Pali, the word is vipaka. This is consciousness that results from the karma. It's the fruition of the karma. So unwholesome and wholesome karma produce results, and those results are states of consciousness. Usually we think of the result of karma. Say, if I get into a car accident and I'm injured, I say, oh, my injury is the result of my past karma. Or if I if I played a lottery and I win, oh, I say, wonderful, my good karma just brought its results. But technically speaking, in the Abhidhamma framework, that's not correct language. We could say that the car accident or winning the lottery, maybe that is produced by the karma or comes about by the karma. But strictly speaking, technically speaking, the result from the karma are states of consciousness, cittas. So the karma is like a seed, and those seeds, when they ripen, they produce other cittas, which are the results of the karma. And then there are other types of cittas which are called, this is a very approximate rendering, functional. The Pali word is kriya, which means just performing some operation, some activity. We're going to see the functional cittas as we go along. We'll see what they are. And now the resultant and the functional cittas are neither unwholesome nor wholesome. They're called
It's on the bottom right.
Oh, I see. Okay. Abhyakata, yeah, the Burmese like to turn the VY combination into a BY combination. I think the Sri Lankan keeps the V. So it's Abhyakata. Means literally undeclared. So this is not declared to be either wholesome or unwholesome. So the unwholesome cittas, this is consciousness accompanied by one or another of the three unwholesome roots, greed, hatred, and delusion. And the wholesome consciousness is consciousness which is accompanied by one or by the wholesome roots, which are non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, and which can manifest as generosity, loving kindness, or wisdom. Okay, now if you turn to the manual on page 28, we can see how these two schemes for classifying consciousness intersect. Okay, so in this table, this table 1.1, and we'll just take the 89 cheetahs. We don't want to get into the 121 at this point. Okay, so we start with what are called the mundane cheetahs, the cheetahs pertaining to life within samsara. And so you can see we have the sense sphere cheetahs, the fine material sphere cheetahs, the immaterial sphere cheetahs, and then the world transcending or supramundane cheetahs. So those are the four classes of citta by way of their plane. And then within these planes, we can see how the cittas are distributed amongst the unwholesome, the resultant, and the functional. So among the sense sphere cittas, we see unwholesome cittas, then we see wholesome cittas. Amongst the fine material sphere cittas, we find wholesome cittas. And notice, in the fine material sphere, what is missing? Unwholesome. We don't get unwholesome cittas belonging to the fine material sphere. And then in the immaterial sphere or formless sphere, we also have wholesome cittas. As we'll see, the fine material sphere wholesome cittas are the cittas that occur when a person attains one or another of the jhanas, the meditative absorptions. And similarly, the wholesome immaterial sphere cittas are the cittas that occur when somebody, a meditator, occurs one or another of the immaterial meditative attainments or formless attainments. Okay, then in the sense sphere, we find both unwholesome and wholesome resultants. Here's what's called beautiful resultants. Then in the fine material sphere, we find certain resultants. And these resultant cittas, to anticipate, the resultant cittas in the fine material sphere will be the cittas that constitute the underlying stream of consciousness, the passive stream of consciousness of the beings existing in the fine material realm of existence. So when the beings are reborn in the fine material sphere, that rebirth consciousness, and then the flow, the underlying subliminal flow of consciousness that takes place in those beings, that is the fine material sphere, resultant consciousness. And similarly, the immaterial sphere, resultant consciousness, that will be the underlying subliminal stream of consciousness in the beings who have been reborn in the immaterial sphere of existence. Even though this might not be grasped fully, but is it to some extent intelligible what I'm saying? Or a complete puzzle? If you find it puzzling, don't worry too much, because as we go along, we're going to come to this in detail. Did you have a question? It would be good to take the microphone.
I can't tell if the rebirth is the same process as the karma, or the karma is just states of consciousness in this?
No, the karmic states of consciousness in this life are what determines the rebirth into the next existence.
Okay, so they're connected.
Right. Yeah. We're going to get into that in much greater detail as we go along. I'm just trying to bring that in order to make clear what the significance of these types of consciousness. Okay, and then there are certain types of consciousness which are functional, and today we should start getting into the functional types of consciousness. So here are certain types which are called rootless, which don't have either unwholesome roots, greed, hatred, and delusion, or the beautiful roots, non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion. And then we have certain functional types of consciousness belonging to the sense sphere, certain functional types of... Maybe I should come to this later. Okay, I'll just say what it is now, but it will become clearer later. These functional types of consciousness in the sense sphere, those are the types that occur in arahants. They correspond to the sense sphere wholesome types of consciousness. But the mind of an arhat, because he's freed from birth and death, the mind does not create any more karma. So there's no karma being created that will generate a future existence. And so it's said that their consciousness is purely functional. And so the fine material sphere of functional consciousness, this is the consciousness of the arhats when they enter the jhanas, in order to experience the bliss of the jhanas. And similarly, the immaterial sphere of functional types of consciousness, these are the types of consciousness of arhats when they enter the formless or immaterial meditative attainments. So they enter those attainments just like ordinary people, but ordinary people create wholesome karma in those attainments. Wholesome karma that will govern their future rebirth. The arhats don't create any karma, and so it's said that their consciousness is purely functional. Okay, then we come to the supermundane or world-transcending types of consciousness, and these are divided into two broad classes. The wholesome, and these are the four types, are called the four world-transcending paths, the paths, the stages or states of world-transcending realization or penetration of the ultimate truth that cuts off completely certain defilements. So there are four paths laid out here. And each path consciousness cuts off a certain number of defilements and brings immediately after the corresponding fruit. And those four fruits, those are types of consciousness which are considered resultants because they are the results of their respective paths. Okay, so this is in a way what I'm doing by going through this chart right now. I'm sort of anticipating or laying out an outline of everything that's going to come in the rest of this chapter. So as I said, if some of this is perplexing and frustrating and incomprehensible now, don't worry, by the time we get through this chapter, you'll have a much better idea of what's going on here, I hope. Maybe I should ask, I'm a little hesitant to ask for questions, because I'm afraid I'll have to keep on saying, be patient, wait till we get to this section or that section. But if there's anything that you just ask the question, I'll see whether I should answer it now or postpone it.
I just want to ask, like, why 89 and why 121?
Yeah,
like,
that will come later. For now, let's be satisfied with the 4 and 4 rather than the 20 and 20. Okay, so then let us go into the next section. So, the section or the passage that we just took on the four planes of consciousness, that sort of lays out the subject that's to be covered as this chapter unfolds. And so now we come into the exposition, detailed account of the kama vachara chitani, the types of sense sphere consciousness. And these are in number, as we'll see, 54. And the manual takes first, I think it seems to be going from the lowest up to the highest. So it starts off with the unwholesome types of consciousness. This is the akusala chitani. And now, what determines a state of consciousness as being unwholesome, as I said a short while ago, is the presence of the unwholesome roots. And there are three unwholesome roots, probably whenever you even come to an introduction to Buddhism, you hear the three unwholesome roots: greed, hatred, and delusion. Now, according to the Abhidhamma, and this is a very important point, in every state of unwholesome consciousness, every akusala citta, delusion is present. So delusion is an invariable, inseparable accompaniment of all unwholesome cittas. But the relationship between greed and hatred as unwholesome roots is one of mutual exclusion. That is, in any citta, unwholesome citta, if it has greed, it won't have hatred. If it has hatred, it won't have greed. And this is referring to the cittas at the level of the occurrence of the individual momentary citta. But in terms of sequences of cittas, we could say greed can be a condition for hatred. Like, say, I see another monk, say, gets praised, and people say, oh, you gave such a wonderful lecture this afternoon, and I gave a lecture too, but nobody praises me. Then I look at that monk or at the people who are praising him, and I feel hatred or anger or upset. So in that case, it's the greed for praise that is generating the aversion towards the other monk or towards the people praising him. But those cittas are occurring at different times. Or if I'm feeling in a miserable mood, because things are going sort of against my will, and so I'm upset and grumpy and angry. So on those occasions, there are states of hatred arising, aversion, displeasure, discontent. And so to squelch those that feeling of discontent brought on by that citta is rooted in hatred, I get myself a tub of ice cream and I indulge myself. Oh, wonderful, tasty, so wonderful. Wow. And that way the grumpy mood gets dispelled by the indulgence of the greed and the delicious ice cream. But even though we could say that in this case, aversion or states of cittas accompanied by hatred are leading to states of cittas rooted in greed, but they're not occurring simultaneously. Okay, so now the manual is going to take the cittas in the sequence, the typical sequence of the three unwholesome roots. First those rooted in greed, then those rooted in hatred, then those rooted in strong delusion. That's a point I should have mentioned. So delusion accompanies states rooted in greed, states rooted in hatred. But there are certain other types of cittas in which delusion can occur by itself without the accompaniment of greed or hatred. We'll see what those are in a little while. Okay, so first the states rooted, the cittas rooted in greed. So maybe to get familiar with the sound of the text, let's read this passage in Pali. Tatta katamang kama vacharang. So it's asking, here, let me just get the text so I could. Okay, so it's saying, here or amongst these, what are the states that pertain to the sense sphere? So we have the first, somanasa sahagatang. Ditti gata sampayutang. Asankari kang ekang. Okay, so there's one citta accompanied by joy, that's somanasa, and it's associated with wrong view, that's ditti gata, which means a view, a wrong view. And it's asankarika, that means unprompted. Okay, the next one, number two, somanasa sahagatang, ditti gata sampayutang, sasankarikang ekang. Okay, third, okay, so this is accompanied, a citta accompanied by joy, associated with wrong view, but this one is prompted. And I'm going to explain these terms after we finish reading together. Okay, third, somanasa sahagatang, ditti gata vipayutang, asankari kammikang. Somanasa sahagatang. Ditti gata vipayutang. Sasankari kammikang. Okay, so these two are accompanied by joy. Both are accompanied by joy. Now, differing from the above, These two are disconnected from wrong view. No wrong view in that kind of consciousness. And then number three is unprompted or spontaneous. And number four is prompted. Okay, now we come to 5 to 8. So these are parallel to the first four. The only difference is upeka sahagatang, that they are accompanied by or associated with not somanasa, not joy, but upeka, which is what is translated as equanimity, but it actually means, as I'll explain, neutral feeling. So it's upeka sahagatang, ditti gatta sampayutang, asankarikang ikang, upeka sahagatang, ditti gatta sampayutang, sasankarikang ikang. Okay, so these two are associated with equanimity, disconnected from wrong view. One is unprompted or spontaneous. The other is prompted. And then number seven is dittigata vipayutang, that it's disconnected from wrong view, and asankarikang. So this is unprompted or spontaneous, and then this is dittigata vipayutang, sasankarikang. So this is the consciousness associated with equanimity, disconnected from wrong view, and prompted. Okay, so now we can see. Here I make the important point, here the relevant point, that the consciousness rooted in greed is divided into these eight types on the basis of three principles of, too bookish a word, dichotomization. In other words, that there are three principles for making distinctions. Okay, the first of these is the feeling that accompanies the citta. And the feeling here can be either joy or upeka, what's translated as equanimity. Okay, the second is the presence or absence of wrong view. And the third is whether that citta is prompted or unprompted. And so when you take these three distinctions and you take their permutations, then what results are these eight types of cittas. Okay, first, the first four types of citta are accompanied by joy. The Pali word here is somanasa, which comes from the prefix su, which usually indicates something which is pleasant or easy. Like we have sukha is happiness, sukata is something which is easy to do, and then manas is mind. So sumana is a happy mind, and somanasa is a joyful feeling. And somanasa, it's a feeling which is mental rather than bodily. It's not rooted in bodily sensation, but in the mental process. And it's pleasant rather than painful or neutral. Okay, then here the word upeka is used, but in explaining or interpreting this word, we have to be careful, because the word upeka in the Buddhist text is used in two senses. The usual sense, when upeka is praised as a desirable quality, in that case, upeka signifies that we call this lofty spiritual quality of equanimity or impartiality, a mind that cannot be swayed by biases and preferences. And so we say that the Buddha is the sort of perfect model of upeka, equanimity. He has no preferences. His mind is always balanced in a state of imperturbable equanimity. But the second meaning of the word upeka, a very ordinary meaning, it's neutral feeling. That's a feeling that inclines neither towards joy nor sadness. And so it's the experience of the object in a neutral manner. So this kind of feeling is also called, in the Pali text, adukkama sukha vedana. So it's the vedana is feeling. Adukkha means not painful. Asukha means not pleasant. So in the case of a state of mind rooted in greed, upeka is not that desirable, lofty equanimity, but it's simply neutral feeling. So sometimes a greedy state of mind, usually or often it's accompanied by joy. When I get what I want, you know, when I dig into that bowl of ice cream, then a joyful feeling is arising, accompanied by that greed. But there are states of greed where the feeling is neutral. Can anybody think of such a state? Anybody have any good examples? That's a good example, yeah. Yeah. Maybe somebody who goes shopping and they just, you know, pick things off the shelves. I'm not thinking of a thief, a kleptomaniac or a shoplifter, but somebody who just, take this, take that. So there's no particularly joyful feeling, but they want this, they want that. And maybe they don't really need these things, so it's not fulfilling an essential need. But they're just almost compelled to keep on purchasing things.
Is habit then neutral?
Is what?
Is habit then neutral?
Habit.
The habit of being greedy.
It's more the state of mind rather than the habit. Okay, so then the second principle of distinction is the presence or absence of wrong view. And so then it said that the citta is ditti gata sampayuta. And here the word ditti means view. And usually in the Buddhist texts, unless the word view has the prefix samma, which means right, then the word ditti signifies wrong view, a distorted view, a misleading view. And so wrong view accompanies this consciousness rooted in greed as a conviction, a belief, an opinion, or some kind of rationalization. Okay, and then I say here in this commentary that the view may either reinforce the attachment from which this citta springs by providing it with some rational justification. So let's think of some example of this. Okay, that's a very good example. So, why not? If you don't, wouldn't feel embarrassed, maybe you could say how you.
Well, I mean, it's close to all my times.
Excuse me.
Through direct experience of seeing my entitlement and,
okay.
and seeing it
okay.
as yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and also maybe certain, okay. I have like a craving to go on existing as a separate self in a future life. So then the view comes in as a kind of rationalization of that craving with the view that I have a separate self that will go on to a future life and that will exist forever in a blissful paradise in that future life. So in this way, there's this fundamental craving to go on existing, and then the view comes in to rationalize and justify that craving for continued existence. Or somebody, here maybe another case, they want in this life to go on indulging their desires without having to face the consequences of their immoral behavior. And so then they will develop the view, give rise to the view, that there is no consequences beyond this life of good and bad actions. So I don't have to face the consequences, and so in this way, I can go on indulging my desires for present enjoyment.
Not to be answered, but to me, this wrong view and delusion becomes sort of confused at one point, right? But I know delusion is not part of.
Yeah, I think maybe
greed.
The English word delusion is, when we try to fit it into the framework of the Buddhist texts, the English word delusion could be ambiguous. So it could, the way we usually use it as a translation of moha, it represents that factor that's identical with ignorance, with not knowing. But the English word delusion suggests something also that might be close to wrong view. So when I use the word delusion, I'm using it as a rendering of the Pali word moha, which is like stupidity or foolishness or not knowing, not understanding, not wrong view. Though the two are associated, but they're distinct. Okay. Yeah. Wait, take the microphone. Yeah, it's right behind you. Don't be greedy for two microphones.
Yeah, it's between avijja and moha.
Yeah.
So the current accepted translation into English is avijja is ignorance and moha is delusion.
Yeah.
So it goes back delusion from the Latin de ludre. So it's like to play false, to deceive. Whereas this ignorance, it comes from again, you know. It is the negation of knowing, aware.
Yeah.
Right. So in this case, I would understand in this way. So let's say, I know the smoke. No, I don't know smoking is harmful to me, but I smoke. So that is ignorance. But now somebody told me smoking is harmful, and yet I still smoke.
Yeah.
That is delusion. So it's an active one.
That would not correspond to the use of the Pali words. Not.
But it
I think. Let me continue with the exposition. I think we would be getting off to a sidetrack there.
Oh.
Yeah. By trying to distinguish delusion and ignorance, from the standpoint of the Abhidhamma system, the two are synonymous. They're just used in different contexts. So right. Let me just continue with the exposition
sure. Okay.
Here.
Sure.
Okay, so we have four types of cittas which are accompanied by wrong view, and then we have four other types which are dissociated from wrong view. So in these cases, greed is operating in them, but there's no wrong view. So in this case, I'm enjoying the ice cream. I don't have any particular view about the ice cream, but I just enjoy it. And this person who enjoys the smoking, he doesn't have any view about smoking, but he likes to smoke. And so this is the indulging the greed or states of consciousness rooted in greed, but there's no wrong view involved. Oops. Okay, now we come to the third distinguishing feature. And this is the principle of whether the consciousness rooted in greed is prompted or unprompted. And the word, the Pali word here, from which this translation prompting is derived, is that word sankhara. But here it's used in a rather specific sense to mean, I use various renderings, prompting, instigation, inducement, or the application of an expedient. I'm not quite sure what that means. I think I took this from a Pali commentary. Okay, so, and this is continuing, this is important. The prompting may be something which is imposed by others, or it may originate from within oneself. And then the means may be bodily, verbal, or purely mental. So let's take some examples of prompting by others. So, you know, I just want to go home today, this evening, and take a rest. But my friend says, let's go to the mall and, what is it, where they have the 28 flavors of ice cream?
Baskin Robbins.
Okay, let's go to Baskin Robbins to get some ice cream. And say, nah, I want to go home and rest. Come on, don't be a killjoy. Everybody else is going. Okay, so I say, okay, I'll go. Okay, and then I look at the menu. Nah, I don't want any particular ice cream. And they say, come on, there's great strawberry ice cream today. And so they order the strawberry ice cream. And then I eat it. And sort of to eat it, and when I'm eating it, I'm enjoying it. But because I had to be persuaded by others to come there, you say that is a prompted, the cheetahs are prompted. Okay, then the prompting can also arise from within myself, within oneself. Okay, let's take a really bad, unwholesome types of cheetahs. Okay, I'm a little kid in a store, department store, and I see a set of pens and pencils, a pen and pencil set. And I want that pen and pencil set, but I don't have any money. And I'm looking around and thinking, should I? There are no mirrors, no cameras, no attendants moving through the aisles. Should I take it or should I not take it? The voice of conscience is saying, don't take it, it's wrong, it's evil. but I really love that beautiful pen and pencil set. Take it, take it. Nobody will find out. So then finally, I take it. So in that case, the prompting is coming from within myself. Okay, so that is the distinction of prompting of unprompted and prompted types of cittas. Okay, so those are the eight types of cittas rooted in greed. Okay, now we come to the two types of cittas rooted in hatred. This is rooted in the second, or has the second unwholesome root. So let us, again, we'll read the text together, then I'll explain. So, Domanasa Sahagatang, Patika Sampayutang, Asankari Kamikang. Okay, we could read, since there's only two, we'll read them. We'll finish reading them first, then I'll explain. Domanasa Sahagatang, Patika Sampayutang, Sasankari Kamikang. Okay, so these types of consciousness, these cittas, notice that they are accompanied by a feeling which is called domanasa. Domanasa is the opposite of somanasa. So somanasa, which accompanies the cittas with greed, somanasa is joy or delight when one indulges the greed. But the consciousness that accompanies hatred, or the consciousness rooted in hatred, is accompanied by this negative mental state. Here I use the rendering displeasure, or even we could say a tinge of sadness, one might say, or a tinge of, is there another word that we could use? Some kind of discontent, okay. Okay, and then what's interesting and a bit puzzling, why the text says, instead of saying that it's associated with hatred, but instead it uses a synonym for hatred, that word is patika. So patika and dosa are two words for the same thing. Dosa is what we usually translate hatred, and to translate patika, I used aversion, but in the Abhidhamma way of analyzing mental states or explaining mental states, the two are just synonyms. And so the distinction between the two states rooted in hatred, the distinction is not by way of the feeling. Both are accompanied by displeasure, by domanasa. So the only distinction, one is spontaneous when hatred arises just on its own, you know, conditioned by some external events, just somebody does something that displeases me and anger arises, aversion arises, hatred arises, ill will arises. But also, the hatred can be prompted. We see this in politics when a politician wants to mobilize a certain group of voters, say, to support him. Often he'll demonize other groups, maybe Mexicans or or Muslims or others. And in this way, getting the emotions of his audience excited, and then saying, I'm going to solve the problem. Vote for me. Okay, so in this way, in the people listening, their states of hatred or aversion in this case, are prompted. And perhaps people can also, I guess they can also stir up hatred within themselves. Maybe they're not particularly spontaneously, hatred doesn't arise, but maybe as they reflect on something, like somebody, Reverend Jinchuan here, maybe he takes my book and walks off with it, or we're in the library and we're both reaching for the same book and he takes the book. And maybe initially I think, it doesn't really matter. But then I go home and I start reflecting on this. I really wanted that book. He took it. The nerve of him. How inconsiderate. And now I have to wait 2 weeks or a month before he returns it. And this way, by reflecting, then my ill will gets stirred up. So maybe that's the prompted citta. Okay, so in this case, we have two types that are associated with, accompanied by displeasure, associated with aversion, and one prompted, one unprompted. And notice anything interesting, and this I find puzzling in the Abhidhamma, anything particularly interesting and even puzzling about the cittas rooted in aversion compared to the cittas rooted in greed. Something that seems even counterintuitive to me. The way the Abhidhamma would explain that, that the pleasure and the aversion are not arising simultaneously, because the cittas, I know it seems that way, and as I said on the first class, I'm not 100% defender of everything in the Abhidhamma. Quite a lot, or some things in the Abhidhamma seem counter to my own intuition and sense. But the way the Abhidhamma system and proponents would explain that, the pleasure is not simultaneous with the aversion, but there's a sort of temporal gap between them. But because they're rising and passing so quickly, they seem to be simultaneous. Okay, I'll give you a hint. Okay. Somanasa sahagatang ditti gatta sampayutang. Right. We don't find in the states of hatred any cittas with hatred accompanied by wrong view. And yet it seems to me that so much aversion and hatred in the world is start up by wrong view and accompanied by wrong view. Okay, in Nazi Germany, the reason why Germany is where a country has fallen down so badly, it's because of the Jews, the communists. Or in the South, you know, it's the blacks coming into our schools and ruining the educational system. Or in some circles, it's the Muslims or the Mexicans who are destroying the country. So these seem to me like views, and what is accompanying those views, it seems, is aversion, is hatred. But the Abhidhamma system doesn't take account of that. Okay, this is the way I would explain it or try to understand it. I don't see the aim of the Abhidhamma system to be to set up a complete explanatory, a complete system of psychology that can explain everything. But the contours of the system, the factors or the vectors of the system, what gives it its particular shape, are the spiritual concerns of the Buddha's teaching and the aims of the Buddha's path. And so the Buddha's path is aiming at liberation, and it's framed, the Buddha's teaching is framed against the backdrop of the 5th century of India in the 5th century BC. And so the kinds of views that are prevalent there and that the Buddha sort of addresses in his own, the discourses and the suttas, are the types of views that fall into the two extremes of either eternalism, upholding an eternal deity or some kind of divine reality, like the Brahmins of the Upanishads, or that hold an eternal self, the Atman, and the opposite of that, the nihilistic views, which speak about the person or the self being annihilated at death. And maybe from the Buddhist standpoint, those kinds of views are rooted in greed, different types of greed, the greed for eternal life or the greed for self-indulgence in the present. And so the Buddha's teaching in the discourse, in the suttas, it's not taking account of all the kinds of views that could have arisen over the course of the next 2,500 years. That's my explanation. Okay, I want, unless there's some quick question, I want to go on. Okay, now we come to the views which are rooted in, exclusively rooted in delusion. And these are called the moha-mula cittas. So moha is what we translate as delusion. And these types of cittas are called mo-muha cittas. You see, the word mo-muha means something like strong delusion or maybe exclusive delusion. Okay, so let us read them together. Upeka sahagatang. Okay, this is a difficult word. Vichikicha. Sampayutang. Ekang. Then upeka sahagatang. Udacha sampayutang. Ekang. Okay, so number 11 is one type of citta, which is accompanied by equanimity. Again, this is neutral feeling, and it's associated with doubt. I'm going to explain this. And then number 12 is again a citta accompanied by neutral feeling. And this one is associated with udacca, which means restlessness or agitation. So those are the two types of consciousness in which there's no greed, no hatred, but there's present delusion, sort of standing out, sort of out in the open. It's not hiding behind the greed or hiding behind the hatred. Okay, so you could see that the feeling that accompanies these two types of consciousness is neutral feeling. And again, this is a bit, I would say, counterintuitive. Of course, when one is in a state of doubt and perplexity, it seems like an unpleasant state of mind. And when the mind is restless and agitated, again, it seems like an unpleasant state of mind. But again, what the Abhidhamma will say is that, probably this is the way they would explain it, when you're in a state of doubt, the actual feeling that goes along with that doubt is neutral feeling, but you don't like being in a state of doubt, so that aversion towards the doubt is what's accompanied by the displeasure, by the feeling of a very mild degree of hatred. And similarly, when the mind is restless, then you don't like being in that restless state. So on a later occasion, maybe just seconds afterward, there arises that mental feeling of aversion towards the restlessness, and then that aversion is accompanied by the feeling of displeasure. Now, according to the Abhidhamma, as we'll see, doubt arises only in this one particular type of consciousness. But restlessness arises in all unwholesome states of consciousness. So whenever there's greed, whenever there's aversion or hatred, along with that greed, along with that hatred, there is some, in that consciousness, some kind of restlessness, a greedy mind, a mind with hate, is never a peaceful, tranquil state of mind. But in this particular citta, there's no greed, no hatred. So this is just a state in which restlessness comes up and becomes the dominant sort of mental factor in that state. So it's the restlessness together with the delusion. And so because there's no greed and hatred sort of in the forefront of the mind, so the restlessness becomes more prominent. Maybe to give an analogy, it's somewhat like, you know, the Renaissance style of portrait painting, where maybe I think the Mona Lisa is like this. Like you have the Mona Lisa, then there's a landscape in the background, you know, meadows. I don't remember the Mona Lisa in detail, but it looks like meadows and a woods. But everybody focuses on the face and figure of the Mona Lisa. But the landscape is there. So that's a little bit like the greed and hatred sort of in the forefront. And the restlessness is like the landscape in the back. But then maybe the same Renaissance painter can do a landscape painting. So then there's no figure. No face, no personal figure in the foreground. So then the viewers focus on the landscape. So the landscape is now standing out. So that's like the restlessness and delusion now coming into the forefront. Okay, so that takes us through the 12 types of unwholesome consciousness. And then there's a little verse that sums up the 12 types of unwholesome consciousness. So let's recite this together. And then the guide will have some examples, simple examples to illustrate them. Attada lobha mulani. Dosa mulani cha. Dosa mulani cha dvida. Moha mulani cha dveti. Dvadasa kusalasium. Okay, so 8 are rooted in greed, 2 are rooted in hatred, 2 are rooted in delusion, Thus, there are 12 types of unwholesome consciousness. Okay, then, as illustrations of some of these, for the first, okay, with joy, holding the view that there is no evil in stealing, a boy spontaneously steals an apple from a fruit stall. Okay, again, with joy, holding that wrong view, he steals an apple because he's persuaded to do so by a friend. Okay, then 3 and 4, the same, except that the boy doesn't hold a wrong view. And 5 to 8 are parallel, except that the stealing is done with neutral feeling. Okay, 2 types rooted in hatred. Okay, one man out of hatred murders another in a spontaneous fit of rage. And then one man murders another after premeditation and maybe persuading himself to do so. So it's done with deliberation. 2 types rooted in delusion. Okay, one person due to delusion doubts the enlightenment of the Buddha or the effectiveness of the Dhamma as a path to liberation. And the person is so distracted in mind, this is the mind with restlessness, that he cannot focus the mind on any object. Maybe you could see the restless citta when you're trying to practice mindfulness of the breathing, and then there's just constant restless state of mind. And one thing that should be said about doubt, what is meant here by vichikicca as doubt, this is not the inquisitive kind of doubt where you're trying to investigate the Dharma and then you raise questions and asking, how is this? Why is this? What is the reason for that? Is this true? Is that true? And then you're trying to investigate to clear up your understanding. But this is, sometimes it's called maybe skeptical doubt, though skepticism could be good. Maybe I call this sometimes a perverse kind of doubt, the kind of doubt where you're just unable to make up your mind, to make a firm decision and place trust and confidence in the Buddha or in the Dhamma for Buddhists. Okay, now I could ask whether there's any questions. Yeah, please. And I'll always take the microphone when you're going to ask the question.
This is a question that will come up kind of later, but it's one that I've had. The cittas rooted in greed are said to be accompanied by greed, whereas those rooted in aversion are said to be associated with aversion. And I was curious about why they're different.
I think what you meant to say is that the cittas rooted in hatred are said to be associated by aversion.
Thank you, yes, yeah.
Yeah, but rather than saying that they're accompanied by hatred, it's said they're accompanied by aversion.
Well, on 95, for instance, it uses, for greed, it says loba sahagata, which is accompanied by, right? This is page 95, sorry.
Page 95?
Yeah, we had done a little bit of this previously, but it seems like an okay time since we're going over these cittas. Which is analysis.
Let me just take a look.
Sure.
They really there's pretty much the same meaning. Okay. I wouldn't describe any significance.
So association and accompanied are...
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
What I see is the question, why in the analysis we just read, it said that these are the cittas rooted in dosa and hatred, but then it says that they're accompanied by patika, aversion. I don't know the reason. But patika and dosa are treated as synonyms in the text. It could just be for some kind of elegance of exposition to make it more interesting. I don't know. Somebody here? Yeah, please.
On the table on page 28, an individual in the sense sphere, they can oscillate between their subliminal mind stream.
Would say the question?
The subliminal mind stream of someone in the sense sphere might oscillate between the unwholesome, wholesome, and rootless chittas. Would that be true?
Let's not get into that question now.
Okay.
We'll come to that issue about the subliminal chittas of those in the sense sphere, as well as the other spheres. We'll take that. We'll be coming to that later.
Okay.
I just mentioned in the case of the fine material sphere and the immaterial sphere, because people might worry what is exactly meant by those resultant chittas.
Okay.
But we'll come to this. We'll be coming to that probably next week.
I actually thought your explanation of the doubt was quite interesting.
Mm.
And I was wondering if you could use the unwholesome doubt also in another context. Could you mention just particularly Buddhist?
Yeah.
But would it just be unable to make up your mind about something?
Yeah.
Like there's two options and you just keep going back and forth?
Yeah.
Or I don't know if there's any other examples of doubt. Because I thought it was interesting you said there's a kind of quote-unquote doubt that we have that might be considered wholesome in investigating the Dharma.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of doubt, what we call doubt when raising questions about sort of investigating the Dharma,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't really know how the Abhidharma itself would treat that kind of doubt, but I would see that probably as a very early stage in the arising of panya or wisdom. So in the suttas, using the sutta style of explanation, like there would be suttas where it would say, how does wisdom arise? Here a person approaches a wise and learned monastic, raises questions and asks, how is this? What is the reason for that? Why is this said? And so forth. We find like maybe some example, Majjhima Nikaya Sutta number 95 is an example of this. Majjhima Nikaya Sutta number 135, the reason that beings become wise and foolish, those who don't approach learned teachers and raise questions become foolish, those who approach and ask those questions become wise. But where that state of mind of asking questions, where it fits exactly into the Abhidhammic scheme, it seems maybe that despite the Abhidhamma's pretense to be all explanatory, this is maybe a little gap in the system. On this side, any questions? Okay, so let's move on because the really difficult types of chittas to understand are the rootless chittas. And so I want to move into that. You know, I'm not sure if I could finish it today. But before we come to explaining the rootless chittas, in a sense I want to jump ahead to look at a particular chart which is going to help us understand the rootless chittas. This is a chart that comes on page 155. There's a table, the table 4.1, in case anybody doesn't have the book, so I'm putting it. Okay, now according to the Abhidhamma system, chittas, states of mind, occur in certain fixed sequences which are determined by certain laws. This is called in Pali Chitta Niyama, the laws that govern the sequencing of cheetahs. So it's not that one cheetah follows another at random, that anything can occur after anything else, but the cheetahs occur in particular fixed sequences. And in the case of a sensory cognition, that is, the cognition that takes place through the physical senses, the eye, ear, nose, tongue, and the physical body, in a complete act of cognition, there are 17 cheetahs. For our purposes, we don't have to be concerned right now with the what's called the bhavanga. The bhavanga is what I call the subliminal flow of the citta. So that is the cittas that are at this subliminal level that are just flowing by one after another, the same type of citta. But now what is occurring when a sense cognition is about to occur? An object impinges on one of the senses. In this case, it's a form, a visible form, impinges on the eye sense. The first citta that arises is called five-door inverting. And this is a citta which just turns to that particular sense door through which the object has impinged. I compare this, it's like living maybe a guard in a building, or maybe you're in a home that has five doors. And then comes a knock on the door, and to open the door, you have to turn, what door were they knocking on? I don't know if that's a real situation, but you could imagine it. So that's the five-door inverting. It just turns to whichever sense door the object has impinged on. In this case, it's a visible form. So this citta turns through the eye. It arises at the eye. It's followed by eye consciousness. A citta that just has the function of, it's difficult to come up with words that illustrate such a primitive function. It's like a camera, let's say a camera, that the camera just takes in the scene before it. Like I'm taking a picture of Venerable Jinchuan, let's say, the camera doesn't know who it is. It doesn't even identify it as a human being, but the camera just sort of, I don't want to say registers, because that comes later. I don't want to say receives, because that comes later. But, I'll just say picks up the form. So that is the eye consciousness. Then there's a consciousness that receives the form. Then a citta that momentarily just investigates what is it. Then a citta that determines what it is. Then comes a series of seven cittas called javanas. There's no adequate translation for that, which respond in some way to the object that has been determined. And then two cittas at the end, which register the impression of the object. And this whole process takes place in like about a thousandth of a second, a hundred thousandth of a second. So very, very quickly. Okay, so now we have the background, in a sense, to be able to understand what is going to be meant by the rootless cittas, and then some of the functional cittas. Okay, I'll leave this here so that we can refer to it. Okay, so now let's go back to page 40. And now we're going to be taking the rootless consciousness, you can see, of which there are 18 types. The rootless is called in Pali ahetuka. Yeah. You probably know the word hetu. I think this would be the Chinese yin. I think it's first tone, right? Yeah. Yeah. So without a hetu, without a yin, maybe it's wu yin, bu yin, wu yin. Okay. Okay. Actually, there's a translator here. I don't have to translate. So, ahetu means no root, and ahetuka makes it an adjective, rootless. So these are cittas. They don't have the wholesome roots or beautiful roots. They don't have the unwholesome roots. So they're rootless. And the rootless cittas are considered the weakest type of cittas because it's the root that gives strength to the cittas. Okay, now first we come to the unwholesome resultant cittas. These are called akusala vipaka cittas. And now when we use the expression unwholesome resultant, this doesn't mean that these cittas are unwholesome. The rootless cittas are not wholesome, not unwholesome. But these cittas are the results of unwholesome cittas. And so unwholesome cittas produce their results, which are called unwholesome resultants, resultants of the unwholesome. And wholesome cittas produce their results, which are results of the wholesome. But the resultant cittas are not themselves unwholesome or wholesome. They're karmically indeterminate, abhyakata, because they're not creating any new karma. Okay, so now let's go through the unwholesome resultant cittas. Okay, you could recite upeka sahagatang, chaku vinyanam, tata, sota vinyanam, gana vinyanam, jiva vinyanam. Okay, let's go do the whole thing first. Okay, dukkha sahagatam, kaya vinyanam, upeka sahagatam, sampatichana chitang, upeka sahagatang, santirana chitang, chati, imani satapi, akusala vipaka chitani, nama. Okay, the first is the I consciousness, that is this consciousness in the series. It's number 5, this one, which arises in this position. So that is a rootless resultant consciousness. And it's accompanied by neutral feeling. It says accompanied by equanimity. Again, that equanimity is the neutral feeling. And then it says tata. Tata means so too. sota vijnana, which is the ear consciousness, nose consciousness, and tongue consciousness. The ear consciousness, nose consciousness, and tongue consciousness all are accompanied by neutral feeling. Okay, now our ice cream lover over here says, wait a minute! You're telling me when I eat that vanilla fudge ice cream and I'm enjoying it, that's accompanied by neutral feeling? The Abhidhamma advocate says, wait a moment, don't get so excited. What is actually happening, the momentary tongue consciousness is accompanied by the neutral feeling. But after that, you're enjoying the ice cream, the taste of the ice cream. Though there are cittas arising in this jhavana stage, which is just like a split thousandth, 10,000th of a second later. So you ice cream lover can't detect these 10,000th of a second cittas one by one. That's why you're getting so confused. So it's really these jhavana cittas that are enjoying with this joyful feeling the taste of the ice cream. But that tongue consciousness is accompanied by the neutral feeling. Okay, but the body consciousness is different. In the case of unwholesome resultant body consciousness, that citta is accompanied by dukkha vedana, by painful feeling. So it's said, the Abhidhamma says, the four types of subtle of sense consciousness, eye, ear, nose, and tongue, are accompanied by neutral feeling because there's some kind of the contact of the object with the sense faculty is not as strong and sharp as that of a tactile object hitting the body. But the body consciousness is accompanied either by pain or by pleasure. In the case of the unwholesome resultant, it's accompanied by pain. And as we'll see, in the case of the wholesome resultant, the body consciousness is accompanied by pleasure, pleasant feeling. Okay, so this is the number five. Here we have the eye consciousness. If it were an occasion of hearing, it would be ear consciousness. If one is smelling something, nose consciousness. Tasting, tongue consciousness. And if one is experiencing some touch sensation, it would be body consciousness. So the five types of bare sense consciousness occupy this position. Okay, then this is followed by a kind of consciousness called sampatichana, which we translate receiving consciousness. And so we explain here in the explanatory guide. I'll just read from the book. I don't want to move away from this chart. So after that eye consciousness, I'm on page 41 under receiving consciousness. Immediately thereafter arises a citta which apprehends or, quote, receives the object that had been seen by eye consciousness. So this is the receiving consciousness, and it results from the same type of karma that produced the eye consciousness. Okay, then immediately after the receiving consciousness, there arises the next citta, which is called the investigating consciousness. So this is another rootless resultant consciousness which has the function to investigate or examine the object that had just been cognized by the sense consciousness and then received or apprehended by the receiving consciousness. And so the receiving consciousness and the investigating consciousness arise only in the five sense doors. They can arise with regard to any sense object in the case when there's a form appearing to eye consciousness. They take the form as object. If it's an ear consciousness, they'll take the sound. Similarly, with a smell, with a taste, or with a touch sensation. Okay, so those, you could see we have seven types of unwholesome resultant cittas here. Okay, I think in 2 minutes I can take the wholesome resultant. I have 2 minutes left, right? Okay, so we have the wholesome resultant. Okay, we don't have to read together, we'll skip that. You know the pronunciation now, so you can read for yourself at home. So the significant difference here is in number 12, we have sukha sahagatang kaya vinyanam. So when wholesome karma is producing the first four types of sense consciousness, the feeling is still that of neutral feeling. But when it's producing body consciousness, resultant body consciousness, the feeling is one of pleasure, a pleasant feeling. Okay, then the receiving consciousness is still the same. In the same way, it's accompanied by neutral feeling or equanimity. But now we come to an interesting difference with the investigating consciousness. You see, for the unwholesome resultant, there's only one kind of investigating consciousness accompanied by neutral feeling. With the wholesome resultant, there are two kinds of investigating consciousness. One kind is accompanied by somanasa, by joy. The other kind is accompanied by neutral feeling or equanimity. The reason for this difference, it's explained below in the guide. It says, whereas the unwholesome resultants arise in regard to an undesirable object, and so the response to that undesirable object in the investigating consciousness is just neutral feeling, indifference. But the wholesome resultants can arise in regard to an object that's either desirable or extremely desirable. If the object is extremely desirable, then the investigating consciousness will be accompanied by joy. If the object is just moderately desirable, then the investigating consciousness will be accompanied by equanimity, by the neutral feeling. You might raise the question, isn't it possible that for the unwholesome resultants, isn't it possible that the objects can be either undesirable and or extremely undesirable? Why do we make that distinction? It's a good question. I don't know the answer. Maybe tonight I should look in. There's a big commentary to this manual. Perhaps that brings up the question. But for now, we just have to take it on trust that in the case of the wholesome resultants, or in the case of wholesome karma, when it's ripening, the object can be either extremely desirable or moderately desirable, whereas in the case of unwholesome karma, the object is just considered undesirable. Okay, maybe any questions that we could take quickly? Please.
I just want to ask, like, for the people who are blind, do they skip the eye consciousness?
No. If it's a complete blindness, the eye consciousness won't arise.
They won't arise?
No.
So
no.
They will, like, basically they'll skip the fifth and goes to receiving?
No. You see, this is a complete eye-door process. So in the case of somebody who's completely blind, an eye-door process won't arise. Forms will impinge on the mind, visible forms, but they won't bring up the five-door adverting consciousness to turn towards the eye-door. So this series won't occur. But they will have they'll have complete ear, nose, tongue, body door consciousness. So they'll have the same kind of process, but not with the eye consciousness.
I have another question. It's just like, for people, the desirable and undesirable might be different between.
That
people.
Is a really good question, and this is a point I have to say where I have a certain problem with the Abhidhamma system. What? And the issue is brought up later. They say that there are certain objective standards by which one can determine what is desirable and what is undesirable. And those are the standards that are determined by the ordinary person of the world. What the ordinary person of the world that considers desirable and undesirable. I have to say, I have a lot of problems with that and expect a lot of other people will too. Like, I could see the Abhidhammikas composing the Abhidhamma in India saying, okay, curry dal with a lot of chilies is desirable. And now maybe a Chinese pilgrim comes from China to India to study the Buddhist texts and says, let's try some Indian food, and they give him some curry dal with a lot of chilies, and he takes one bite and spits it out and says, please, no chilies. But they say, but we are giving you the most desirable to honor our venerable guests. We're giving you the most desirable curried spice chilies. Like, this was my experience in Sri Lanka, in the early days in Sri Lanka. Oh, we have a Sudhandru, a white monk, a monk from the West, coming to our country, so we have to honor him with the most spicy curries. But they're thinking, but our monks say that those are the most desirable curries. Yeah, so you raise a very important and I would say valid question.
May I ask a quick question?
Who's asking?
Very quick question. So what's the difference between the receiving consciousness and investigating consciousness? The difference between this, is that the same?
No.
Or very similar to the six consciousness or seven consciousness? I mean, from eight consciousness perspective.
Yeah. I would say to understand them, one has to see their names. You have to maybe base yourself on the metaphor implied by their names. So it's quite difficult to understand their functions except in a metaphorical way. So the receiving consciousness, we could say the eye consciousness, like the camera, just takes in the form. Now the receiving consciousness is, again, metaphor is like picking up or taking up the form. And the investigating consciousness is sort of looking into the form with like the question, what is it? And then the determining is determining what it is. I'm trying to think of an analogy, but my mind is a little slow. But we'll see more how these states of consciousness function as we go along. Okay, maybe we could take one more. I say I'm over the time limit. Did you have, was it you who?
I don't have a mic, but Curtis.
Yep.
So, could it be...
Hello?
Could it be similar to a robot?
To a what?
Maybe a robot that receives it but doesn't understand if it's a package or not. And then the next robot looks and it can see who the package is for, just the label.
Yeah, maybe that's a good analogy.
And then the next robot or the person then looks into it, what it is.
Yeah, or maybe the same robot, but say you have a conveyor belt, there are a number of maybe boxes. Maybe at a monastery, Venerable Ananda, Venerable Sariputta, Moggallana, Mahakasapa, and they're getting packages through the mail. So there's okay. Maybe the package coming down the conveyor belt is like the eye consciousness. Then something picks it up. That's like the receiving consciousness. Then a beam of light shines down on the address label. That's like the investigating consciousness. Then the robot is able to read, and to some extent, the label, and it determines who the package goes to. And then it'll turn around and put the package in the box, either Sariputta, Moggallana, Mahakasapa, Ananda. Maybe that's like the Javana. But don't take this too literally, it's just an analogy. Okay, I think we'll end for the day and then I'll have to come back and finish this up and then move on Friday. Okay, so we'll end with a quick sharing of the merits. I was going to send Venerable Jintwan the file with the chants. I'll do that tonight. Akasa ta chabuma ta deva naga mahedika punyantang anamoditva chirang rakantu sasanang chirang rakantu desanang chirang rakantu mang parang pavagupadaya vichihetato etantare satakayupapana rupiya rupicha sanya sanino dukkha pamuchantu Pusantu Nibuting.